Welcome to Dish the Dirt, a light-hearted and fun podcast about Australian flower growers, their stories, knowledge and insights into the industry. I'm your host Rebecca, and each week I speak to a different farmer and get them to dish the dirt. Dish the Dirt acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which we work and live, and recognise their continuing connection to land, water and community. We pay respect to elders past, present and emerging. Hello, it's been a while, but welcome to season 6, episode 1 of Dish the Dirt. I decided to take a little bit of time off in between the last season and obviously this season. Dish the Dirt has been going now for over 2 years. How crazy is that? And I just wanted to slow down and decide what I wanted this podcast to be about, because maybe this is a reflection on myself, but I always try and help as many people as I possibly can. And so I think I got a bit caught up with like, let's do this and let's do that, and I'm going to do this other big thing. But really, essentially, what I really want to do is focus on sharing the stories, knowledge and insight of our Australian flower farmers. And there will be a couple of exciting things coming along in the future, but as for now, Dish the Dirt is going to remain just Dish the Dirt podcast, and I can't wait to bring you this new and exciting season of Australian flower farmers. And we've got a few other little surprise guests along the way, so I'm really looking forward to bringing you this each week for the next 8 or 9 weeks I think we've got. So this week we speak to Aaron from Arcobaleno Farms. Arcobaleno Farms is situated half an hour from Shepparton in the Goulburn Valley, Victoria. It is on what was once a soldier settlement property and a dairy farm. The farm grows a wide range of seasonal field-grown cut flowers, which are sold via the flower market in Epping. From its small start in 2018, taking 20 bunches of poppies to market, with many trials and tribulations, they have learnt a lot over the last 5 years and now regularly send a truckload of blooms into the wholesale market weekly. Aaron, it was wonderful to speak to you. There is so much to be gleaned from this conversation, and there were so many topics that have been brought up that I'm really interested in and would like to explore further, one of them being the barriers of entry into flower farming. I'll let you get to that yourself, but if anyone would like to have conversation after you listen to this episode, please email me on dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com, or you can send me a DM. You can also pick up the phone and give me a call if you wish to chat through some things. Thank you again, Aaron, and let's get into it. I can hear you. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, loud and clear.
Yeah, awesome. Wow, we're off to a good start then.
Yeah, I had my other half help me set it up.
Oh, good, good.
Using his like gaming headphones.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know how to do any of this.
Oh, man. I don't use anything super fancy. I just have some headphones and my iPad and, you know, I make it work. So it's all good. So how was your day?
Yeah, good. We've finished picking for the season now, so we've just been doing some planting for spring.
Yeah.
So it's quite nice now going into May to like just slow down the pace a little bit, and it's not as hectic. So
yeah, that must feel pretty good.
You kind of get to the end of like middle of April and you're like, okay, I would like to like slow down for a bit now. So
yeah.
But then by the middle of July, I'm bored, so.
Yeah. I hear you. I have to say I'm a massive fan of your flowers and what you grow. I buy quite often through the Tulip Garden, and your sweet peas are like nothing else, and I love how you pick them. and your amaranth, and what else do I get? Zinnias, so good. So
thank
just
you.
Before we get into,
I very much appreciate that. It's very nice to hear, because we do send everything into the market. It's quite a thrill to like see it on Instagram, or when someone comments on it, or you see it in someone's wedding bouquet and you know it's yours because you know where they bought it from. So thank you. I appreciate that a lot.
Yeah, not a problem. So let's get into how you got onto your farm and where your farm is situated to start off with.
Sure. So it was a really like long journey. I mean, my parents are both in the flower industry and have been since I was born.
Yeah.
So my father works for the Tulip Garden. He's been in the wholesale market since his early 20s. He actually met my mother. She was a florist at Say It With Flowers in Melbourne. That's how they met. He worked there, so did she. They had flower shops when I was a kid and things, and we always had a flower shop, and I grew up at the back of the flower shop. And I never, ever wanted to do anything with flowers. You know how, like, your parents are, like, not cool and you don't want to be involved when you're a teenager? I thought it was the most boring thing ever. I was always interested in, like, farming, and I wanted to grow food and have a farm and have a chicken farm. And I went to university and did agricultural science, and I was so set on that. And Dad would always like be like, grow flowers, we can sell them. Grow flowers, we can sell them. And it just kind of slowly changed into that. I realized that I had the industry knowledge there and the science knowledge. And so when we finished uni and we were looking to buy a house, we thought we would make the move. So we're in we're near Shepparton. We're in a little town called Stanhope. So it's about half an hour east of Shepparton.
Yeah, beautiful.
We bought up here because it was so much cheaper than Melbourne, like for what you could get for money. So we kind of bit the bullet and moved away.
Yeah.
So we bought in here and we moved in late 2017. Okay. And it was a really hot summer. And we moved in and I thought, oh, what am I doing? It was an old dairy farm, and then it was like beef cattle for 20 years. It was full of like barbed wire fences and weeds, snakes. There were so many snakes when we moved in. And I was like, oh, what am I doing?
How was like the soil after it being like so many cattle being on it?
Well, it was hard.
Yeah.
But because it's had 100 years of dairy cows, our organic matter is very high. It's about 8%.
Okay.
We bought this farm specifically for the soil because I did soil science at uni. I kind of came in knowing what I was looking for. I was quite lucky in that sense that we bought this farm specifically for horticulture.
Okay.
So you can actually get soil surveys for up here because it's all irrigated agriculture. So all of the water that comes from Lake Ilden is actually stored for the very purpose of watering all the farms around Shepparton and up near the river.
Yeah,
so that's how they grow pasture around here. They flood the whole paddock, and that's how they grow their hay in the summer, or that's how they grow their peaches for SPC and their tomatoes and things. So that was really important. And our farm is actually an old riverbed, goes through the middle of the farm, and on either side is a Shepparton fine sandy loam, which is quite a good quality soil.
Yeah.
So it was a bit compacted and things like that, but overall it's excellent agricultural soil to grow on.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah.
So we were up here and we decided to go flowers for a number of reasons. And so our first year was 2018. Okay. And it's all well and good that you learn things out of textbooks about agriculture and growing wheat and that type of thing.
Yeah.
And then you read books from North America about growing flowers. Yeah. And then you try and grow flowers in Northern Victoria when it's 40 degrees and you don't expect the weed load and it's a disaster.
Oh, no.
So my first year was a really big learning curve.
Yeah.
We did everything by hand. We had one tractor that kept breaking down.
Oh,
we hand weeded everything. I have this terrible habit of thinking I can do a lot more than I can. and planting thousands and thousands of seedlings. I mean, we turned a little bit of money over, but we learned a lot. And I think that's what I've taken out a lot of this, is that you make mistakes. It's really powerful when you make a mistake, is to learn what you can out of it. Like at the start, it's like, you know, it break your heart to sow thousands of sweet pea seeds and the mice eat every single one of them. But you learn not to do that again in that way. So that was a really big learning curve. So yeah, we ended up here. And then we've
And
just kind of grown from there.
yeah, so what did you try in your first season?
Far too many things. We went down the seedling path and we grew like Queen Anne's lace and dianthus and larkspur, nigella, things like that. And we started picking in the spring and they grew and they were good, but it was a real problem with weeds. And I think that's a common theme on your podcast and anyone who starts a horticultural operation. Where you don't understand, especially if it's not soil that's been cultivated before, you do not grasp how many weeds will grow when you rip up the soil and add water to it. So that nearly sunk my business. I will be the first to say that, because I treat this as a wholesale operation, and I've learned in the last 6 years is that I need to be really aware of how much things take time to do. So it would take us four, we do everything by standard bed length. So everything is in like 50 meter lengths. So we would take me 4 hours to weed one bed.
Yeah, she's
A long
crazy.
time. And you have to, and my mother's always said, if you can make more money in the Woolworths checkout, is it worth doing it? So, you know, you take
Cheap.
4 hours just to weed it. And you take X amount of time to pick it and things, you don't make any money. So that first year was a real reality shock. And we kind of was, it was more, very much a fork in the road.
And what made you decide to keep going? Well, I'm going to go back to how you dealt with the weeds, but what made you decide to keep going
Yeah, that's a really good
on
question.
this
I'm
path?
incredibly stubborn. I have stages of, oh, poor me, what have I done with myself? What, you know, I'm very notorious for having minor breakdowns. And then within like 2 hours, I'm done and I'm totally focused and totally stubborn on doing that. And I think that's how I cope with stress, is those breakdowns. And so with this, with that knowledge, the next thing we bought was a plastic mulch layer to lay plastic mulch. So we looked at our biggest problem and what was holding us back and made that investment, and it was a very big investment, and that saved my business because we went from weeding from 4 hours to weed one bed to spending $6 on plastic and drip tape and not having to do any weeding.
That is
So
incredible.
that saved our business. So that was why, I mean, we were also up here and moved away, and my other half followed me up here. So that was definitely a big motivation, was to make it work. So we just continued on.
And what do you love about it? What gets you out of bed every single day?
You know what it is? It is the fact that I don't have to commute to work. Get out of bed and I'm at work. I can't imagine, and I've done it, commuting to work in the morning. That in itself, the lifestyle of living and working on a farm, whatever it is, to me is really relaxing. And probably the main benefit of what I do is that I am in a place which is my own little sanctuary, and I don't have to commute with traffic or find parking or deal with other people. I am here. I think that in modern society, because I was reading a book written by Joel Salatin the other day, and it's only in the last 60 years that we have started commuting to work. For thousands of years, people lived above their shop, they lived above their butcher, they lived above the candle maker shop. We lose so much of our lives commuting to work. So I really, really love that I don't have to commute to work.
Yeah, and in that, do you find it hard to switch off from work?
I don't think I could, even if I didn't live here. My brain is, in some senses, a blessing, and in other ways, it drives me nuts. I think about this farm day in, day out. I think about every little detail. I think about everything we could do better, what I could do better with my staff, how I could explain things better. So, in that sense, yes. I think, oh, I wish I could switch off, but I will be the first to admit that I'm a workaholic and enjoy what I do. So, it doesn't really bother me.
And do you think that's what it takes to kind of get this kind of job done? Because
Oh,
farming
yeah.
is hard work.
For sure. I think you need one, you need to be a little bit crazy. You have to be a, you have to be able to take measured risks, be a little bit crazy. But if you don't enjoy what you do, and I think that goes for anything, but for things that are higher risk or have a lot of factors that can, cause a lot of problems, definitely. I really think if someone is going to go into it, they are better off to start really small and grow up through those stages and learn how hard it is before they do it.
And you always knew that you were going to sell straight to wholesalers from when you started the farm, just because of the background you had in the industry. You didn't ever think, oh, I might go to florists or florists might come to me. It was always like, no, I'm going to go straight to wholesale.
We originally started in the vegetable section, and we went to farmers markets, me and my other half, and that really put a sour taste in my mouth. If you have a lot of rain or something, no one rocks up, and you've got to throw all your heirloom tomatoes out because no one has come and bought them. So there's brilliant farmers markets out there, and there's a lot of people that do really well. But from our point of view, that was not an option. And from our contacts within the industry and stuff, it was just a natural progression. And I really think the support of our wholesaler has enabled me to grow like we have, because I haven't had to do that marketing side of things. I mean, we don't get the same price you would going to the florist or selling to the public, but the work that people do to sell flowers, even from the florist point of view, is another whole industry. I mean, I take my hat off to those farmer florists who grow the whole bouquet and then market it and sell it to the local public. That is a lot of work. And I am the first to admit my downsides is that I don't have the patience to deal with the public. So it was a natural fit because, I mean, I can talk on the phone and sell things, but I would much rather be out there growing flowers. So that was where we took the business, and that's how I make every business decision, is on that wholesale base.
And did that, did you speak to, did you do some research as to what you were going to grow, or did you just decide, I love these flowers, and then went on that?
Early on, it was really good to have the sounding board of my parents and of Steve and Paul at the Tulip Garden. Dad would throw ideas across and we would try them, and they would work or they wouldn't work because, I mean, you get a certain price for a product, and a community like ours, there's an industry price, and if you can't grow to that price, it won't sell, which is fine. So some things we would grow, I would lose money on, especially early on. And so I go, well, that was a bad idea. So there was a lot of trial and error, because you can read it in a book, and a lot of this information comes out of North America. It's very different to what happens in Victoria. Because our frost is not the same as an American frost. You might get a particular scabiosa, and they say, do not plant until frost date. But in Australia, they live all winter and grow. And that only happens through trial and error. I mean, we started growing zinnias on a large scale when we first started, and I got looks of, we haven't had zinnias they're baggy and they'll break. And they were really, really popular.
Oh, they're so
And
good, by the
that
way.
was
So
from
good.
our, that was from my, I'm going to try and grow these.
Yeah.
So it's really a learning curve. I mean, that's where a lot of people get unstuck, I think. And that's where we got unstuck is don't take that information you find on the internet as gospel. The best way to do it, don't do what I did and plant five rows of it and watch it all die because it's too hot. But plant a few of it and see how it goes. If you're going to succeed as a farmer in any industry, you need to have the skills to observe what that plant or animal is doing. So I think that that is the most important thing. I mean, you can listen to people all day and what sells really good in the market. And that might sell and that might grow really well in Melbourne, but it might be too hot up here. So I've always found that really interesting when weeding out what to grow and what not to grow.
And how, like, what's sort of the biggest learning curve you've had? Like, has it been the weeds, or has it been a pest that's come through, or has it just been the weather? What's been your biggest adversary, I guess?
The biggest thing in our business that has really changed it has actually been growing things from seed. Now, if you're not a farmer, you'll think, well, isn't that what all farmers do? Well, no, a lot of farmers buy in seedlings and they're expensive. I mean, they're beautiful quality. The company in Melbourne that does it do a beautiful job. They're all lovely there, but they're dear. And when you're doing that, and you, if you're going to be a real farmer, you need to work out how much it's costing you, how much time it's going into it, and you need to work it out. So we in our second year made the decision to buy a vacuum seeder, which is just like a big box with holes in it and a vacuum cleaner. And you sprinkle the seeds on the top, and the seeds will individually suck into each hole, and those holes line up with the seedling trays. So you don't have to stand there and drop like 288 tiny amaranthus seedlings in each hole. We did that. I don't recommend it.
No, I can't imagine
My
that's fun.
other half nearly went cross-eyed doing it.
Yeah, fair enough.
So that was an investment we made early on. And so it would take us about 10 seconds to seed a whole tray of 288 seedlings
Yeah,
as
wow.
opposed to 15 minutes.
Yeah.
And then the second
Game
part of that
changer.
is then, all right, I've just like mechanized my system. How do I now grow these seedlings so that they work? Because, you know, in the farm, it's different to the backyard. You just put them in like a polytunnel and they grow. So we did a lot of research, and because of my science background, the biggest thing I took out of that degree was learning how to find qualified information. So it's all well and good to like Google how to start amaranthus seedlings. But if you go to Google Scholar and actually read a scientific study on like germination time and temperature of amaranthus, it'll tell you they need 22 degrees and moist soil. So we invested in a heating table. So this table stays at a certain temperature all the time. And an automatic mist system. And this wasn't extravagant. This was like on the side of our house near the septic tank with a bit of plastic over it because the power
Wow,
point was
love
there.
it.
And there was a few old gates and some like red gum logs.
Great.
That setup grew about $30,000 worth of seedlings in the first year.
Wow, that's amazing. Yeah, amazing.
So we went straight in with that. So I have, at the moment, I have one man who does seeding for us one day a week. He does all the trays and labels them all. We either put them out on the heated table or we use our old trailer cool room, which is now humidified and heated. And we put them in there until they just start to sprout and then they go out into the light in the greenhouse. Now, this is no million-dollar greenhouse. This is a humidifier and a $200 greenhouse heater. And then it goes into a secondhand hoop house that we built from scratch.
So
And it
you're pretty
and
much
it
saying you don't need to have super fancy things to do things well.
spot on. I like fancy things. I'm a little bit of a spendthrift. and it's a real temptation.
Yeah.
But you don't need it. And that's what I've learned, is that you can make things work and not spend a lot of money, but you need to know what your aim is. So if you go in blindly and just sow these seeds and put them in the greenhouse without any heat control, you're going to get dodgy germination and you're not going to get the full tray.
Mm-hmm.
So you need to know what the aim is. So what you need to achieve, what the benchmark is, and do that the way you can with the money you've got.
Yeah.
Whether that's, I mean, we didn't have and we still don't have fancy like nursery tables. I took all the gates off all the paddocks with the angle grinder out there, took all the gates off, got some firewood, put them on the floor, and then put all my seedlings on the gates.
Yeah, I love it.
You know, we did 42,000 bunches of flowers this year.
Wow.
And most of those seedlings started on old gates with wood.
Yeah, good.
So you can really hustle and do a lot with a little.
Yeah. And how big is the land that you're growing on?
Well, the farm itself is 110 acres and we probably use maybe 4 or 5 acres at a time.
Okay, yeah.
The rest of it we cut for hay. One of our local dairy farmers cuts for hay and looks after that land.
Yeah.
That was just how the economics work up here, is the bigger the farm, the cheaper it is, because, you know, no person who comes from the city and just wants a hobby farm buys 110 acres.
Yeah.
That's a lot of land to mow.
Yeah, it's so a lot.
From my house to the back of the farm is like a kilometre walk.
Okay.
I mean, it's not a big farm in Australian standards. It's a small farm. But if you're moving from like 2 acres or like 5 acres – and you buy here and you're like, what have I done?
Yeah. Yeah.
You think, uh-oh.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's really good. 110 acres worth of flowers would be
that would be a
too
lot.
Much. Yeah.
I mean, there is some farms that are that big that grow that many flowers, but I don't think my mind could fathom that.
Yeah. Yeah. So what has been your biggest achievement so far?
I think we built a new packing shed cool room last year, February last year. So we did 3 years, like I said, with the gates and the old dairy and our little truck, and did everything by hand and really, really worked hard to show a bit of money coming through the business. Mm. So I could go to the bank and say, can I have a loan? This is what I've done. You know, a lot of people are really touchy about talking about money, and I've never had that problem, because I think it helps people who want to farm know how other people have done it.
Yeah.
So we went to the bank and said, can we have a loan? And it was a lot of hard work to get the loan and a lot of paperwork and business plans and, you know, risk analysis and things like that. And they gave us the loan. And so we were able to build a new bunching shed and cool room and buy a bigger truck with this money. That's really enabled our business to grow.
Mm.
To a point where it's actually like it's going to start paying its way and being a full lifestyle for us. So
congratulations.
Shed, when we laid that shed, and this was like during the second bit of the lockdown and stuff, so it took a really long time to get everything done. So it was excruciating, because I'm not patient at all. So, and when that shed was done, I mean, we went from like a 4x4 meter like access building on the old dairy, which was like falling down, and a trailer cool room, to a 20x12 meter shed with like a 10 square meter cool room. And it was a different world. So that's our biggest achievement so far, I reckon.
Yeah, that's incredible. Congratulations. Thank you. You wouldn't have known yourselves after.
Oh, no, not at all.
After that. So how many staff do you have working for you?
This is another thing, is that I realized really early on how important a team is.
Mm.
There's only so much one person can do. And some people are really good at doing it themselves. But when you add people to that team and you treat them well and make them feel a part of your team, you can really go far. So we brought someone on in our first year. So we had one casual lady, and she stayed with us casually on and off for 5 years. The most we've had is seven casuals. I think in spring of last year, so 2021, we had seven casuals, all locals. And at the moment, I have two casual staff who help me plan. So that's been really amazing. I mean, early on, you go into it and think, oh, no, I'll do it all. I can't afford to pay someone. But when you give someone else a job, you're more motivated to, get things organized so they can do their job efficiently. But you also get a return on investment in having someone else there. You can pick so many more flowers and be so much more productive if there's someone to help you, if there's someone to stand there and put the elastic band on when you chop the flower.
You've ever done, and like, say you've gone out and sprayed something, is there anything you've done and regretted, like straight away, and thought, oh no, that was the biggest mistake ever?
I've poisoned a few things. It's probably been a little bit windy to spray the grass near the plants, and I've like killed all the nigella.
Oh
But I think my biggest thing is growing malacca balm. That's the biggest nightmare on the planet. And I did it twice. I thought, oh no, this will be a good idea. And I regretted it from the day we planted it because we couldn't get the seed started. So I bought seedlings. And then it all fell over in the rain because I didn't net it. And then you have to pluck all the leaves off it. And then by the time you've done all that, you've hardly gotten your money back for it. And it was all bendy and weird. It was just a disaster from start to finish. It was just the biggest nightmare in the world. So my hat is off to those growers who grow nice malacca balm because I certainly cannot do it.
And over your time in the industry, what have you seen change?
Oh, I don't really know if I can answer that because I'm so new. It's been like, and I'm very insulated too. I don't really go to the market or anything. We deliver, but I go during the afternoon and drop off in the cool room. So, I mean, I think there's been a lot of smaller farms doing the whole local arrangements and things. So I think there's a real renewed interest in the last 5, 10 years. About that, I want to work from home. I want to work on the land my parents have or I have. So I think that's really positive. I think that that's a real indication. And I think those smaller farms, I mean, they're not going to grow 1,000 bunches of Queen Anne's lace to send to the market for the florists in the city, but they're going to push that mindset for their local community so that later on, when they do buy flowers for their grandmother's funeral or their friend's wedding, they're going to make that decision to buy local flowers. So I think that's a really positive thing that's happened and change in the industry.
And what do you love about the Australian flower industry?
I think it's, what do I love about the Australian flower industry? Let me think.
Is there anything?
Really? Well, no, I don't love is this true?
What do you like?
What do
Anything?
I like? Let me think. I can't think of anything. Isn't that terrible?
No, that's
What do I like? I don't know because I'm very sheltered. I'm not very extroverted, so I don't really get out much.
You're up in Shepparton, I
Yeah,
understand.
it's a long way. I don't go anywhere.
It's a long way. Is there anything that you would like within the industry to see change or to help support Australian flower farmers in the future?
Yeah, I think that the barriers of entry into growing flowers are very high, and there's a lot of parts of that that aren't being addressed. A lot of some factions in the industry are very obsessed with the imported scene and stopping imported flowers. But it frustrates me because not a lot is being done by these organisations about barriers of entry. So, cost of land, access to land, education on how to grow flowers, soil science, how to start seedlings. These things, there's no Australian support. There's, courses in America that are thousands of dollars and not really relevant to Australian conditions. You can glean stuff from Instagram, But we don't have a research and development organisation that does any research on what variety grows better in Victoria and when we planted it and plant dates. I mean, in America, you can pull trial studies for specific varieties of flowers, which say this one didn't grow as well, X, Y, and Z, because this is what we did and why. And they're collective groups run by universities or just private organisations. Where here we seem to be really focused on hating on imported flowers. And I think, you know, there's merits to that argument that I don't even want to get into. But there's other problems. I mean, there's young people out there who are told, and I was, by their careers counselor, oh, don't go into farming, you're too smart for that. And this is a general problem in the agricultural industry, is that people don't treat this industry with the respect it needs to. I mean, we get all the time in the media, horticultural workers, and they're referred to as unskilled labour.
Yeah, which
So
is
the
completely
ABC,
untrue.
Nine News, all of them, unskilled labour. I can tell you now, my staff are skilled. So I think that really needs to be, and that's not even an indictment on the flower industry, that's agriculture in general. But if we could work together better and address other barriers of entry for the community, we wouldn't have a problem with imported flowers. We blame imported flowers for a lot of industries collapsing, but it's a very blinkered opinion and not looking at other reasons why. I mean, urbanisation has taken over a lot of good flower farms that are now housing estates. That doesn't have anything to do with imported flowers. They sold that farm because they got a lot of money for it, and it's now people's houses. That beautiful sandy soil is now foundations for people's homes. So if we could work better as an industry and not focus so negatively and really address other barriers of entry, that's what I'd love to see change. I don't know how that would work. I don't know who would do it, but that's just my opinion.
I think what a valid and important conversation you've just brought up there, because I think having something like that or stopping these other barriers of entry would encourage young people to get into agriculture and encourage young people to look at flower farming as a valid
Of course. And if
career.
we're not having that conversation behind, you know, if you're going to be a flower farmer, there should be no reason why you can't make a wage of $80,000 a year. You should be able to make a wage like any other professional can. And if we can't develop that attitude, first of all, if we go into it as our farmers don't make much money because they just complain and it's always a drought. If we have that attitude, we're never going to get there as a society in general. And the second point to that is that we need organisations that will support them. We need a collective group that is going to go out and address these issues and lobby the government and, you know, develop things to help people because you need to, one, know how hard it is, but two, you need the support. And there's a lot of support in the US because they had a lot of pressure from imported flowers because they're so close to South America. We do have an advantage that we are really far away from flower growing countries, and we do have a quarantine system that adds cost. It costs a lot of money to get flowers flown to Australia past quarantine. The competitive argument 20 years ago might have been valid, but from my experience, and I'm the first to admit I haven't been in the industry very long, is that imported flowers are more expensive than local flowers. So that is not relevant. The cost is not the problem. The availability, because my local florist in town cannot survive if they can't get imported roses in July for their wedding. They need them. So that is really, really important. We need other people to farm everything, not just flowers. In Australia, the average farmer is nearly 60 years old. And
It's a
they
problem.
can't pass on the land because it's too expensive. So I think that's something. I mean, if I had more time, and I hope to this year, I would like to work on that. I would like, because of my science background, I would like to be able to do short trials on varieties and things like that and have that information available to people, because it's not available. And five, I mean, you can go and ask a flower farmer how to do these things, but it's going to be different to what I do, to what someone in Melbourne does, or to what the big flower farm near me does. It's going to be different because you're going to have a different goal. But if you have that base information, that base, you know, this is what it yielded, this is how it grew, this variety was better. And then other intrinsical aspects of agriculture, soil science, hydrology, plant pest and disease management, these things could be as simple or as complicated as you want. And if you have the ability to learn, so if you're taught how to identify real information from just someone's opinion on the internet and critically think about what you're reading, that is so powerful. And that's not being taught in school. That's not being taught at university very much anymore. So if we had that type of organization, we wouldn't need to worry about imports because our local people would smash it out of the park. Because Australia is a big country. We have a tropical, we have cold. There's no reason we can't have flowers all year round. So.
Awesome. I can't wait for you to do this. I wanted to ask you, who has inspired you the most since you've started flower farming?
I thought about this because I knew you were going to ask me, and I was in a cold sweat panic because I had no idea how to answer it. But I think it would be my late great grandmother. She came to Australia with hardly anything and worked really hard. She was never a flower farmer. She made hats for a living, right? But people who inspire me, like my parents as well, it's that work ethic. Doesn't matter what you do. I don't care how successful you are and how much money you've made. It's how you apply yourself to your job and your life. If you enjoy what you do and you work really hard, like she did, and worked hard for her family and was happy with the country she came to, or my parents, you know, they always run a small business. They always put us first and the business second. And I think that's something I've really looked up to, and it's entrenched into me to do that hard work and to be successful and to provide for my family.
Beautiful. And if you had to leave your farm quickly, what three things would you take with you?
I thought about this too. And anything to do with the flower farm, I would honestly just let burn. I really think it's, I would take my our two cats and the dog. Everyone who follows us on Instagram is going to know who Stella is, because whenever I post a picture of her, she gets twice as many likes as any pictures of my flowers. So I don't post on Instagram anymore because it offends me. And then my other half, I'd make him run. So that's my answer.
And what's your favorite tool?
Oh, it'd have to be my plastic mulch flail. Now, I don't like plastic a lot. Like, there could be a whole podcast on plastic and recycling and biodegradables, and we won't go there. But it is such a time saver. It's so good for soil erosion conservation, and it has just made our business successful. It was built locally. It was built in Tatura by a local man who makes them for the strawberry industry. So we were able to see the local industry. It's really easy to use, and it is the best thing we've ever bought.
So it just goes straight down on the ground, like the ground, and
Yeah, so
then you
you put
sow.
like a roll of plastic and drip tape, and so you prepare the soil how you want, and then it literally just like covers that bit of the bed with a really thin sheet of plastic and puts the irrigation tape under it. So then what you do is you water the bed. And so what happens is all those weed seeds germinate, and they come up and they realize that there's plastic there and they can't see the sun. So they're starved of sunlight, so they die as little seedlings.
That makes me so
So
happy.
you leave it for like a month, and then also in that time, like all the insects and the worms and stuff come up. And because I do a lot of like trash recycling, as in when I refer to trash agriculturally, it's the leftover plant product. So all the stems from the zinnias and stuff, my farm is a mess this time of year. I just leave things growing. I don't care about the weeds when they don't affect the plants, because any roots in the soil is better than no roots. And I just mulch it all and disc it all up, cover it in plastic, and let those worms dig it all up. And when you pull that plastic up or put a hole in it to put a new seedling in it, it's soft and you can see all the worms, and it's just so much better. And you can also have
Beautiful.
black plastic, so you can warm the soil in the winter, or you can have white plastic, which keeps the soil and the roots cool, and it really helps with the quality of flowers in the summertime as well.
Yeah, wonderful. So if people wanted to get their hands on this, how would they do it? Would they find just somebody making it, or just do you Google it?
Yeah, so
What?
there's a few places that will do it in Melbourne. I would Google plastic mulch layer. They're not cheap. They're like a several thousand dollar investment, but they are, you need to have a tractor. I mean, you can even get them for like walk behind tractors now. It's a similar concept to what Floret does with the plastic weed matting. It's just on a bigger scale and it's easier to handle, and you do have to throw it out. I mean, there is biodegradable plastic available. The technology isn't there yet, but it's very common in the vegetable industry. So it's a matter of time before you can get biodegradable plastic. There's even the CSIRO have made a spray-on polymer, which is an organic polymer. So you actually spray it on the soil like a liquid mulch. And it conserves water and does all the same things, and it just turns back into CO2 and water when it's done. So the technology's been there for like 50 years with plastic, but I think with all the microplastic drama and environmental waste and things, it'll be a matter of time before we switch over to things that are a bit better for the environment. So I would start with that. If you're I mean, you can lay it by hand, but it is a volume and a scale thing. If you're a smaller grower, it's probably not practical. I would use weed mat, but it is really good. The white plastic for things like larkspur and things, which actually need a period of cold weather to have good quality, and sweet peas. You don't want sweet peas to be warm in October. You want the soil to stay cold. It changes the game.
I would definitely have loved this when I was weeding oxalis for like four weeks solid.
And people who've never gardened or farmed, they have no concept of how bad it is. And I mean, in northern Victoria, I mean, because I grew up in the Yarra Valley, and moving to northern Victoria, the weeds up here are out of control. I don't know if you've ever heard of a Bathurst burr, but it's a plant that is literally covered in like sewing needle size spines.
Oh, that sounds fun.
I would Google it. It is the most awful weed ever. And then all the bindies, everything up here has got spikes for some reason.
Oh, so
So when
like
the
just like
spurs
Australia,
here,
everything wants to
everything, oh,
kill
these weeds, they want to kill you.
you.
And they are the most awful weed ever. So it was the best thing we ever did.
And what's on the playlist in the packing shed?
I torture my staff actually with Smooth FM in Melbourne. I'm not a sponsor or anything, but they don't like my music. And I've got such a variety of staff, and I'm really proud of the fact. I mean, I've got like 16-year-olds after school, and I've got mums in their 50s and like biker dudes in their 40s. So no one is happy with anyone's music. So I torture them with Smooth FM and like Grease and Olivia Newton-John and ABBA, and it's the best. They all grimace, but they know they're not allowed to complain because they're getting paid to listen to it. So.
And is there anything that we haven't touched on that you wanted to chat about or say about your farm?
No, I think we've covered everything. I think it's just if we're on Instagram, I don't post very many things because I've been really busy, and I don't really run my farm for like Instagram likes. I always forget about it. But if anyone wants to contact me, that is the best way. We're Arcobaleno, which is It is an Italian word that describes rainbow, because we originally grew heirloom vegetables and they come in all different like colours. So that's where that name came from. So where Arcobaleno Farms on Instagram, that's probably the best place to get in contact. I mean, I can't, things like what do I grow and spacing like that, I'm going to tell you, you need to try it yourself. I'm going to say this is what works for me.
Yeah.
But don't, I'm, you, that's the best advice I can give, is I'll give you a rough date and things like that, but I can't stress how much mistakes teach you.
Yeah.
You don't have to spend a lot of money on it, but mistakes are really valid. In an industry where we don't have a lot of education in this country, that is the best way.
Yeah. Incredible. Thank you so much. And anyone wanting to buy your flowers can buy them through Tulip Garden starting again in spring. Am I correct?
Yes. Yeah, so they have looked after us through the last 5 or 6 years. They've been really good.
Yeah.
Helping us with advice. They move all of our flowers. They send them all over the country. I think they sell a lot through the market. But yeah, if you want them, you go and hassle Damien at the market. Give him grief because he's my father, so that's all right. We'll hassle them at the shed too. I don't care.
Yeah.
Even better.
Yeah. Thank you so much. What a great chat. You are so knowledgeable and informative, and you say you haven't been in the industry for long, but I think that you have so much to give. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you for what you're doing too, Beck. It's really good to have some Australian content on the flower industry. So it's really refreshing to hear it all.
Thank you so much, Aaron, for that wonderful, knowledgeable, insightful chat that we had. It brought up a lot of things for me, and I have gone back and listened to this 2 or 3 or 4 times actually, because there were just so many points which I wanted to go over, and I have gleaned so much from this episode. So thank you so much. I hope that other people have the same response that I did. So if you would like to get in touch with Aaron, you can do so via Arcobaleno Farms on Instagram. If you would like to buy their flowers, you can do so through the Tulip Garden, who is situated at the Epping Market in Victoria, Melbourne. Or you can also buy from their warehouse up in Mombulk. Thank you everyone for listening into this first episode of season 6. If you would like to give me some feedback, if there is questions that I'm not asking that you want me to ask, then please get in touch with me at dishthedirtpodcast@gmail.com. I love hearing from you all, and I just want to make this as insightful and as informative as I possibly can for you. So any feedback is welcome. Until next week, I hope that you are enjoying the winter. You've got all the little jobs that you need to do around the farm. I hope you're ticking through them. And until next week, keep being blooming fabulous.